This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Masra said he has asked Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi to tell Chad's Transitional Military Council to stop unending human rights violations.
That was reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka on the prospects of exiled pro-democracy opposition leader Success Masara returning to Cameroon. Details coming up. Also, the World Bank says no discrimination against gay and transgender Ugandans in its programs before new funding. And women-led businesses are generally underfunded, especially in emerging markets. These stories and more on African News Tonight. First, our top story. In Liberia, the National Elections Commission is urging citizens to remain calm until it announces the final results of last Tuesday's vote. This after observers predict the possible presidential runoff between incumbent George Weah and main challenger Joseph Boakai. Results released so far by the electoral body show Weah with a slight lead with 43.80% of the votes, while former Vice President Joseph Boakai follows with 43.54%. Analysts say if none of the 20 candidates wins more than 50% of the votes, a runoff will be held between the top two. For the latest developments, VOA's Peter Cloti reached Henry Flomo. He's the spokesperson for Liberia's National Elections Commission.
We are still at a point that the results have been read by the chairperson and the rest of the board members. And we are also at a point where Liberians will have to wait, as they've been doing, until the results are all announced and the winners are being declared as provided by law.
So how long should Liberians wait for the final results? Because I hear over 70% of the results have been released so far. So how long should they wait till the Electoral Commission declares the final outcome of the election results?
Well, legally, they have up to 15 days from the 11th of October. The law gives the commission max 15 days, but it can also be done before the end of the 15th day. But like you said, we've gone far into the numbers already. So I'm sure the chairperson and the rest of the board might be done with this probably in the next 2 days. I really hope so.
Liberians have been talking about a possible runoff based on the elections results released so far. In the case nobody is able to attain the 50% plus one technical threshold to be declared winner, for especially in the presidential election, what happens?
So the law says the first parties with the highest votes will go for a runoff. That's the law.
And what is the period within which the Electoral Commission will organize the runoff?
That's like 2 weeks. So normally it'll be in the first 2 weeks of November. The last time, so assuming that the final announcement is done, maybe like say tomorrow, just for hypothetical, then you count 15 days from there, you can have a runoff. But I can't speak to whether there will be a runoff or not. What we can do is the chairperson today will again lead the board in announcing additional numbers. So once those numbers are done, all of the 5,890 polling places are done, then we'll know whether there is a second round or there is a straight win.
I understand the National Electoral Commission is calling on the people of Liberia to remain calm as the election results are being released. But some people are saying the National Electoral Commission is delaying in announcing the results and expectations are too high. How do you react to such concerns?
Well, the chairperson continues to say that they are reading the numbers that have been tallied from the various tally centers across the country. So I don't see any reason to feel that something is intentional. She continued to say, what they have is what they read.
That was Henry Flomo, spokesperson for Liberia's National Elections Commission, speaking with VOA's Peter Cloti. Chad's exiled pro-democracy opposition leader, Success Masara, says increasing threats to civil liberties by Chad's transitional military council make it impossible for him to return from exile on October 18th as announced. He says hundreds of citizens arrested for protesting against the military should be released as an indication of good faith before his return. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Success Masra, president of Chad's main opposition party, the Transformers, says the political and security situation in his country remains tense and that he plans to delay his trip to Chad until November to avoid any risk to those who were preparing to greet him on his arrival. On Monday, Masra said he has asked Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi to tell Chad's Transitional Military Council to stop unending human rights violations, including arbitrary arrest, detention, and torture of opponents. Central Africa's regional bloc, the 11-member Economic Community of Central African States, SEAC, appointed Tshisekedi as a facilitator for the political transition in Chad in October 2022, after scores of civilians were killed in protests against Chad's military leader Mohamed Idriss Déby. Announcing his decision to delay, Masra's message was shared on social media, including Facebook and WhatsApp, and broadcast by several media outlets in Chad.
Cette transition boiteuse et bancale se corrige pour être.
He says by violating resolutions of the August 2022 to October 2022 inclusive and sovereign national dialogue, Déby is openly indicating his unwillingness to hand power to civilian rule by November 2024 as decided during the dialogue. Masra says by not releasing several hundred civilians arrested in October 2022 for protesting Chad's military leadership, Déby indicates he has a disregard for human rights. Masra fled Chad to the United States in October of last year through neighboring Cameroon. He fled after the Central African States security forces killed 50 people, injured 300, and arrested several hundred during pro-democracy protesters. Chad's state TV for several weeks showed videos of thousands of supporters preparing to welcome Masra. The government of the Central African State said Masra was to arrive in Chad on October 18 and take part, along with civil society groups, government ministers, the military, and opposition leaders at commemorative activities marking the first anniversary of the Inclusive and Sovereign National Dialogue on October 20, 2023. The dialogue ended on October 20 last year. 32-year-old secondary school teacher Mohamed Ali is a Masra supporter. He says Masra's return from the United States of America, where he is in exile, should have encouraged many scared civilians to protest in towns and villages across Chad for the military junta to respect promises of providing water, electricity, and good roads as it develops Chad while preparing a return to constitutional rule in 2024. The exiled pro-democracy opposition leader said he is calling on civilians to come out in their numbers in Chad's capital, N'Djamena, from October 18 to 20 for what he said will be a true national dialogue. His message was broadcast on his Facebook page and over several radio and TV stations in Chad. He did not give details on what the dialogue should look like, but said it will indicate how unpopular Chad's military government has become since Mohamed Idriss Déby took over from his father Idriss Déby Idnou on April 21, 2021, and continued impunity and violation of democratic norms. Last week, Déby said he was preparing a return to democratic rule and congratulated the military government elite for providing drinkable water, constructing and equipping hospitals and primary schools, and dismantling many armed groups for a gradual return to peace in Chad. Deby called on all opposition leaders, rights groups, and disgruntled civilians, wherever they are, to have confidence in the peace process and join the military government to build peace for a return to democratic rule. Restoring trust will not be easy. In 2022, rights group Amnesty International reported that an end to violations and transition to democratic governance in Chad will require strong international pressure from Chad's regional and international partners and countries like the United States, France, Germany, Qatar, and institutions such as the European Union, the African Union, and the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Uhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Reuters News reports the World Bank will aim to ensure gay and transgender Ugandans are not discriminated against its programs before resuming new funding in Uganda. The World Bank halted funding in August over the nation's anti-LGBTQ law. An executive with the bank says its project documents will make it clear that LGBTQ Ugandans should not face discrimination and that staff will not be arrested for including them. In May, Uganda enacted its Anti-Homosexuality Act, which prescribes the death penalty for certain same-sex acts. Human rights groups say it has unleashed a torrent of abuse against LGBTQ people, mostly by private individuals. When the World Bank suspended new funding, Ugandan officials accused the development finance institution of hypocrisy, saying it was lending to countries in the Middle East and Asia that have the same or harsher laws targeting LGBTQ people. Access to information, training, and female role models can help level the playing ground for entrepreneurial women in the clean energy sector. However, women-led businesses are generally underfunded, especially in emerging markets. Reporter Ruben Chama spoke with Finora Manyala, country director for Kenya at Solar Sister, a company that supports women in Africa to create clean energy businesses. She starts by explaining how her organization is empowering women as energy entrepreneurs.
At Solar Sister, we work with women entrepreneurs just around recruitment, training, and support of these women to be able to run clean energy businesses. Of course, we receive a lot of support from our mother organization, which is Solar Sister US. So I know we've really been doing a lot of biomass for the last couple of years. So right now, we are driving the chain through, you know, just looking at e-cooking. How do we move our customers from just biomass and now really going green through e-cooking? I'm really excited about how now the government is taking this up just to support the mission we have around clean energy and climate change and issues around that.
The conversation about solar energy, especially in Africa, has been there for decades. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the impediments that are sort of impeding African countries from connecting these communities, millions of Kenyans or African rural communities, to access solar energy?
we really haven't given it the focus that it deserves, because I know we have what it takes. You know, we as a country, especially in Kenya here, there's so much that we can utilize in terms of making sure that we connect, you know, our people to the grid. And so I feel like people have been looking at it as a no issue up until where now there's a lot of issues around climate justice, and so now we want to really bring this all together. So I feel like it's more of some sort of ignorance and people really not taking it with the seriousness that it deserves, because I know we have funding that is coming in, we have a lot of actors who are really willing to support this, and so what is left right now is we just want to get down into it and make it happen.
And what can African governments do to support organizations such as US to generate not only electricity but also create jobs for young people and women?
We have to make sure that the national government really sees this as a problem. And so once they do that, then they are able to support even the, say, for example, for the case of Kenya here, the county level, and, you know, support people on the ground to make sure that they are able to make this happen. So I feel like converging people together and bringing this out is very important.
And what can rich nations, the United States, mm-hmm. the European Union, mm-hmm. Japan and others, do to support this kind of push in Africa?
I mean, like, they just need to bring funding. You know, we need money to be able to do most of these projects, if not all. So they need to really be here to bring in the financing that is required to make this happen. I believe if they bring in the support, then it's going to be very easy for us to, again, get out and roll out these projects.
And the issue of technology, are there some certain technologies that the West can help?
Definitely, they could. Maybe around not just technologies, offering technologies, but also just being able to offer the training and expertise that is required. Because, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, we have this technology. It's another thing to really make sure that people understand and know how to, you know, use the technologies.
That was Finora Maniala, country director for Kenya's Solar Sister, a company that supports African women to create clean energy business, speaking with reporter Ruben Chama from Nairobi. Plastic pollution is one of the major environmental problems facing the world today, with less than 9% of plastic waste getting recycled. To help cut plastic pollution, a Kenyan entrepreneur is upcycling plastic bottles to build benches and create sitting spaces in schools. Juma Majanga reports from Ongata Rongai, Kenya.
It's lunchtime at Olekasasi Primary School in Ongata Rongai, Kenya, a town on the outskirts of Nairobi. And thanks to a plastic upcycling initiative by entrepreneur Michelle Muturi, the children now have a place to sit as they have their lunch, benches made from plastic bricks or eco bricks. Muturi fills plastic bottles with crushed plastics and sand and then compresses them to form building blocks.
Rather plastic degrading the environment, which it'll never will. It'll just stay there for millions and millions of years. Why not utilize it to make something that can actually impact someone? So we thought, why not benches?
To help raise their awareness of the environment and conservation, students are tasked with collecting the bottles used to make the eco bricks. The final products are colorful benches that students say have transformed their school environment. 11-year-old Jasmine Sianto is a grade 6 pupil at Olekasasi Primary School.
During lunchtime, I see people, they don't want to go to the field. Even sometimes you get them harassing each other because they want to sit on the benches. So even during break time or when during games time, like right now, they come to sit here, some to revise, some to make stories, and some just to rest.
Sianto's teacher, Domitila Kalondu, also likes the benches.
This is an upgrade for our school. It's so beautiful. It has given us a name.
Muturi, a biochemistry graduate from Claremont Colleges in the U.S., says she plans to expand the project to animal parks and other public spaces. She says the work has been rewarding.
To see them sitting here and enjoying everything that we've all have worked hard for, it makes me feel good. It makes me feel like I have the motivation to keep pushing and keep doing more and keep finding more innovative ways to be of service to the environment.
According to the United Nations, the world produces over 430 million tons of plastic every year, but less than 9% of this is recycled. Africa is particularly vulnerable to the negative effects of plastic pollution because its recycling sector is just starting out. While some African countries, including Kenya, have banned single-use plastics, environmental campaigners say more still needs to be done. Helen Denner leads the Pan-African Plastics Project at Greenpeace Africa.
We are going into, you know, the negotiations for a global plastic treaty, and the next meeting is going to happen in Nairobi in mid-November. For Africa, really, it's an opportunity for them to really negotiate for a strong treaty because the issue of waste management is really a big issue.
While plastic pollution remains a major environmental problem globally, Muturi hopes her upcycling initiative can help mitigate the problem one plastic bottle at a time. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Ongatarongai, Kenya.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken returned today to Israel after talks in six Arab states hoping to coordinate efforts against Hamas while finding ways to alleviate Gaza's humanitarian crisis. Also, Israeli border with Gaza is not only the one to watch. Violence is also rising on Israel's northern border with Lebanon. So to brief us on the matter, VOA's Linda Grantstein is standing by in Tel Aviv. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you.
So what is this Hezbollah and why is it coming up in the context of the Israeli-Hamas war?
That's a good question. So Hezbollah, which is, of course, supported and funded by Iran, is apparently trying to convince Israel not to launch a ground invasion of Gaza by sort of stepping up the tensions with Hezbollah and sort of hinting that it could enter the war as well. So far, it's been somewhat limited. There have been rockets across the border. Israel has responded with artillery, but it's far short of the kind of fighting we're seeing in Gaza. And, you know, Israel doesn't want a war with Hezbollah, and Israel's assessment is that Hezbollah does not want a war either. The question is whether they're going to get dragged into something that they don't want.
Is Israel still intent in carrying out its major ground operation in the Gaza Strip?
Well, Israel's certainly preparing for a ground invasion of the Gaza Strip. It's massed thousands of tanks and tens of thousands of soldiers are on the border with Gaza. That said, it has been now a few days, and it hasn't launched its ground invasion yet. I think Israel realizes that a ground invasion of Gaza, which is very densely populated and where Hamas has a whole network of tunnels underneath Gaza that they call the Metro, is going to be a very complicated military action. So it's not clear if Israel is just sort of finishing its preparations for that ground invasion, or if it's seeing if there is some kind of a diplomatic way out of this. It's also important to remember that Hamas is holding 199 Israeli civilians and soldiers, including the elderly, women, children. The Iranian foreign minister today said that Hamas would release all of the hostages if Israel would stop its aerial bombing of Gaza. Until now, Hamas has said that the only way they would release the hostages is in a prisoner exchange for thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. However, Hamas did not confirm the Iranian statement. Israel has not related to it, so I'm not quite sure how serious it is. But I think for Israelis, the fate of these 199 people is really the top of their agenda.
VOA's Linda Grantstein, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.